Blog Hello, this is Debbie Gangish of the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to WRMR Revenue Marketing Radio. We're so excited to have everyone with us today. As you all know, this is our second season, and what we do is really simple. Every Thursday at 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, we sit down and we talk to a revenue marketer. So unlike a lot of things, a lot of webinars that you can go to where there's some expert on the line telling you what they think you should do, at WRMR, you get to hear what your peers are actually doing. And this also is a very interactive show. So you can interact in a number of ways. You can call us at 646-478-5604 and then press number 1 and we can get you into the queue. Or you can chat with us. There's also a chat feature. And remember, this show is for you to meet other revenue marketers. So whether you are a traditional marketer and you're now moving into the arena of revenue marketing, or even if you're an experienced revenue marketer, the show's for you to meet and talk to other revenue marketers. I am so excited about our topic and especially about our speaker today. And again, every week I don't predetermine what the topic is. I meet a great smart revenue marketer. We talk about the great things that they've done, and then that's how we put the show together. And this week, we're going to talk about the importance of sales and marketing alignment for successful demand generation, with a big emphasis on the process, not on the technology piece. And to talk to us about that today, I'm so excited to have as our guest Frank Donnie, who is the Senior Vice President of Demand Generation for Richardson. Yes, another title with demand generation in it. So let me tell you about Frank's background, and then we're going to welcome him to the show and find out what he knows, what he can share with us today. Frank's had a remarkable 20-year career, really focused on driving marketing and sales operations divisions within both really large companies and really small companies. So the kind of story he has to tell today and the kind of critical success factors he has, you can apply whether you're in a large company or you're in a small company. Frank is a recognized thought leader in the areas of demand generation, pipeline management, and sales and marketing integration. He has been a featured guest speaker on Selling Power TV and is the author of multiple works. One which I really enjoyed was Sales and Marketing Integration, How You Can Increase the Close Rates of Your Early Stage Pipeline Opportunities. Currently, Frank is the Senior Vice President and the Chief Marketing Officer at Richardson, where he contributes in the areas of product management, lead generation, pipeline management, sales operations, and further supports the entire alignment of Richardson's sales and marketing departments. Prior to joining Richardson, Frank served as Director of Marketing Services Industries at SAP, where he built a phenomenal demand generation team that generated billions of dollars in pipeline revenue. Whew, Frank, that's a lot of work, but welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Debbie, and thanks for everyone for joining the call today. I know that your days are pretty busy, and I appreciate your time.
Oh, it is our pleasure to have you on with us today, Frank. And Frank and I met probably, I guess it was back in January. We were attending a conference together, and we started talking, and he started sharing with me his remarkable journey in demand generation. So my first thought was, wow, I have to get this guy on the show because he has got so much practical experience that he can share with everyone. So, Frank, let's start with the first question, and this is the first question I ask in every interview. I want to know, what are the key revenue marketing metrics that you have been able to achieve at Richardson?
Well, that's a great question because every year starts with, our planning and looking at the metrics. And one of the keys to aligning sales and marketing is we want to align the demand generation team. And I can say why I call it a demand generation team versus a marketing team. But we align ourselves to the sales team by owning a part of the pipeline. And what I mean by part of the pipeline is we own closed revenue. So we sit down, we said, okay, last year if we owned 25 or 30% of the closed revenue at the end of the year, we want to do 5 12, 10, whatever percentage better we want to do the following year. So we give ourselves a key performance indicator, KPI, where we then own closed revenue, because that ties us, and that's what ties part of our compensation, so everybody in demand generation team is compensated on hitting that KPI. So that aligns us directly to our sales team. So the big one is, you know, percentage of closed revenue that comes from demand-generated investments. That's our ROI. And then I look backwards. And you probably say, well, why do you work backwards? I say, okay, if I have to own 30 or 35% of the pipeline, based on my sales cycle and my average sale that comes from demand-generated opportunities, how many opportunities have to go into the top of the pipeline, and what are the close ratios of those opportunities? So the next metric is looking at the close ratio to ensure that the sales team are working those and working those to the best of their ability. So those are the two main metrics, because that's what I tie to, and I tie to the pipeline. So, you know, at Richardson, you know, this year, you know, we wanted to drive between 32 and 35% of the pipeline. We're right now approaching 40%, so we're doing very well with that KPI. And our close ratios increased significantly from about 13% to about 21% of demand-generated opportunities.
Wow, all I can say is these metrics are absolutely phenomenal, and I have about five questions just around these metrics. So let me ask you this. The first thing that struck me was the fact that marketing is owning a KPI like closed revenue. How long have you guys owned that metric?
2 years.
And what was that like when you told the marketing team that they were going to own that metric?
Well, you know, the first answer was literally, well, once we hand it over to the salespeople, we lose all control of it. And so you have to get past that first point of no return, which is basically, what, you know, yes, we do own it. We have to embed ourselves in the sales process. So when we talk about the process part, I'll explain to you kind of how we did that. So at first it was, okay, everybody, you know, we need a good, solid process. We have to agree upon what that process is with the sales team, get that alignment, have line of sight into those opportunities as they're flowing through the pipeline and the analytics. And that's how we ended up owning it. It was scary at first, but once we started tracking and getting the analytics and looking at it, you know, it wasn't, because we then understood what we were doing and how we needed to drive the pipeline.
I think that's a phenomenal metric, and you guys are tracking to 40%. Congratulations, Frank. That's awesome.
Well, thanks.
And then the second ratio you talked about was the close ratio. Can you tell me a little bit more about that ratio?
Yeah, so the close ratio, for example, at Richardson we have an 8-stage pipeline. So, you know, stages 1 to 8. 1 is basically, it's a, you know, sales-qualified opportunity, whether it comes from the salesperson themselves, meaning they found it in an existing account or through their own prospecting, or 2, it comes from the demand generation team. And those two leads are fundamentally different. So for all the marketing people on the phone right now, your demand-generated leads are different than the leads that your salespeople generate, because typically the ones they sales generated, salesperson knows them, they have time and investment and emotion built into that opportunity, and, you know, and then they found it themselves. The ones that come from demand generation typically come with history. What do I mean by history? Well, maybe the salespeople are only, you know, used to or believing that they're only getting junk, are believing that, you know, these aren't real opportunities, I'm not going to follow up on them, et cetera. So when you look at it, the ones that come from demand generation are colder. They basically have a lot more work involved in following up and nurturing and moving through the pipeline versus what the salespeople have. So if you actually look at how those flow through your pipeline, you will see dramatic behavioral differences from sales rep to sales rep to sales rep. So one of the things we wanted to do is we wanted to look at that and say, okay, what are the behavioral characteristics? What's happening in each stage of the pipeline and the conversion ratios from stage 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 on both types of those opportunities, and start dissecting the behavior that the salespeople are having against those, and not look at the salespeople and say, hey, you're not closing, you're not working, you're not doing what you need to do with those opportunities, but then going to them and interviewing them and asking them what they need to be able to perform against those better.
I think that is, and you're right, those two processes are absolutely different, and being able to track a lead generated from sales versus one generated from marketing, mm-hmm, would be absolutely two different things to take a look at. I think that's great. I want to come back to another thing that you said, and then we're going to get into process, because one of the things that I really enjoy about I'm hearing Frank's journey is the attention that he's paid to process. And I think a lot of times we all get caught up in the technology part of it, and we don't really pay attention to the process. So we'll get to that in just a moment. But you said something else, Frank, that I have to ask you about, and that was you said that your marketing team is compensated based on these revenue KPIs. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so so you know, every individual on the team, including myself, has a base compensation. And then the variable compensation component of our package is around two primary areas. Well, three, let's put it that way. The first one is the EBITDA of the company, so that's your earnings before interest, depreciation, taxes, et cetera, because we are a venture privately owned company, but we're operating and run like a public company. Where we're quarter to quarter to quarter. So at the end of the year, it's all about earnings. So we have to hit our particular earnings goal. So that makes up a percentage of it. The second percentage of it is there's part of that variable compensation that is tied to hitting the KPIs for demand generation. And again, those are, you know, from closed revenue to you know, number of opportunities, you know, putting the top of the pipeline into the quality of those opportunities. So that ties us directly to that. And then the third one is net promoter score. For the organization. So basically, net promoter score is the percentage of your clients who would openly support you as a reference and promote you in the marketplace. So there is a specific percentage applied against each one of those for that variable compensation. And for example, as a chief marketing officer, 38% of my overall compensation is tied to those three KPIs.
So I think that's great.
I'm very heavily invested in this.
Yeah, I think that's great. And we're seeing more and more marketing organizations that have variable compensation tied to things like number of opportunities that get created in the sales, percent of closed revenue, percent of pipeline contributed. What was that like when you introduced that comp plan to your marketing team?
Well, you know, hopefully every company out there has some sort of variable compensation that they're giving to their demand generation team. And it's tied, usually it's tied to, net revenue, gross revenue, something like that. So they were used to having some part of their overall compensation tied to some sort of KPI. So moving it to something that was a lot more measurable, again, it was scary at first until we had the process in and the analytics in so that we could actually see what was happening. Because if you're flying blind and you don't have the analytics, you have no way to draw a line in the sand and then understand where your performance is and where it needs to be. So once we started seeing the analytics and we weren't managing anecdotally, but we were managing by numbers, everybody settled down.
I think that's great. We've had a couple of questions from the chat room, and I'd like for you to answer the first one, Frank. It says, doesn't all marketing aim to generate revenue? How would you respond to that?
You know, the answer should be yes. They all should, but in many cases, depending on the type of company, depending on whether you're a B2B or B2C, depending on how you go to market, it can be different because many times, you know, looking at revenue and tying your compensation and performance to revenue is different than, you know, many ways that I used to market years ago where maybe it was tied to, mind share, market share, other particular types of KPIs based on how you market to your industry. There are a lot of industries where they market based heavily based on advertising, other particular things where it's more difficult to tie an opportunity to a pipeline and tie that to revenue versus doing, you know, direct outbound or what we call seeding the marketplace, which would be doing, working with analysts, public relations, getting people to go to landing pages, complete forms, things of that nature. You know, so with revenue marketers are individuals who, when they're investing in your marketing and you're looking at those opportunities that go in your pipeline, you're tracking it all the way to the end of the pipeline and tying it to revenue. So there's a lot of marketing happens out there based on how people buy. Because, again, this is tied to how your market buys. And revenue marketing may not be right for every type of company or every type of industry. For Richardson, in our industry, which is sales performance improvement, we focus on the global 1,000 companies. So we have services, we have software that we offer to the marketplace, and we have consulting. You know, we can easily tie that to revenue. But there may be some organizations out there that can't because of the way that you go to market.
And I think that's great. And the follow-up question, what is revenue marketing? And I think you absolutely nailed that. And again, what we're seeing across a lot of organizations is this new addition to marketing. It doesn't replace your branding, your awareness, your communications. But again, using a smart combination of people, process, and new technologies, because quite frankly, you would not be able to do this without the new technologies that are in the market, it's given rise to this notion of the revenue marketer and to building a revenue marketing practice. And as Frank says, it's one that's accountable for revenue, and it is concrete, it's discrete, and it is attributable revenue through the efforts of it can either be called the demand generation team or it can be called the revenue marketing team. So I think that was a great answer. Let's go now to people, process, and technology. And as you and I have discussed many times, Frank, when you're building a demand generation practice, when you're building a revenue marketing practice, it is about a combination of people, process, and technology. And we also know that as revenue marketers, we can do what we do because we do have that core technology infrastructure. And without the right technology, you can't do this. But a lot of companies think that they can just buy the technology and magic just happens. Mm-hmm. And we know absolutely positively that's not the case. So let me ask the first question. How do you, when you think about people, process, and technology, kind of what are the roles at a high level from that each of those play in building a revenue marketing practice? And then let's spend the rest of our time talking about process. But from a high level, how do you knit together people, process, and technology to build this type of practice?
Sure. You know, one thing that we do is we look at the way we go to market. And what I mean by that is, you know, our clients buy from us based on our success factor and our experience in driving these large projects, because our projects are, you know, well north of, $100,000 upwards of multi-million-dollar projects. And if these projects fail inside of our clients, usually people get fired. So, you know, so when people come to us, you know, we market based off of thought leadership, proven performance, things of that nature. So when we look at the way we go to market, we kind of have five steps. We seed, we create, we enable, we accelerate, and we nurture the marketplace. So when we look at that particular structure, seeding is basically where we really think about, using and putting our reputation out in the marketplace through traditional and social media, through analysts and journalists and blogging and those particular things, and championing those issues that are happening in our marketplace. Creating is your traditional demand generation, where we're putting outbound tactical campaigns that create a marketing qualified responder, but then we want to look at that responder, and then we basically vet it out based on specific criteria. Then it becomes it goes to the salespeople, and they have to accept the lead or they have to reject the lead. So we follow that through a specific process, through the create. Enabling is basically we look at our waterfall, and your waterfall is kind of what we talked about before, which is, you're doing your demand generation, your tactics, and you're creating reaction in the marketplace. Well, those reactions are responders. So you have a responder, you have a lead, and the lead becomes an opportunity, and the opportunity closes in revenue. That's called a waterfall. So we want to ensure that we enable that waterfall systematically through the company, and that's kind of where technology comes into play in managing that. Then also accelerate is, we then look at the pipeline and we say, where are opportunities sticking? Where are salespeople having a problem? How can we accelerate the closing of the opportunities? And finally, nurturing. Nurturing are those people who interact with you, and those responders and those people say, hey, you know, I'm really interested in working with Richardson, but I'm not quite ready yet. It's going to be another 3 or 4 months or 5 months. You need to do something with those people. You just don't toss them back, and you just don't talk them out in your database and say, all right, see you later. You want to continue to basically nurture, and it's kind of like waves on a beach, right? Sand isn't made by one or two waves. It's made repetitively over years, and that's messaging, right? It's like waves on the beach. You continue to message it into the marketplace. So when I look at people, you know, we align those five particular areas around people. I have a person on the team who is the owner of the seed component, who handles web, SEO, search marketing, analysts, social networking, content syndication, and also in there is an additional resource that backs up and works the public relations component. I then look at create, enable, and accelerate. and nurture, and I have a team of people who work in those four components because those all kind of tie together with regards to, you know, flowing through the sales process, nurture process of an opportunity. And inside of those are basically all of your block and tackle, your typical demand generation. And also in that area sits our technology. And our technology, I don't mind telling everybody who we use, we use a marketing automation platform called Genius.com. And Genius is heavily tied into every campaign that is outbound and everything we can possibly tie to it, because it's automatically integrated into our CRM system. So by contact, by opportunity, by account, I can see every single marketing piece and campaign and action and reaction, and when anybody in my database visits my website and what they do on my website and what they download from my website. So it does everything outbound, matches and watches everything that's happening on my website, and then it watches and looks for specific virtual buying behavior of these prospects. And then we package those up, and they go to sales to then review and accept as a lead or decline as a lead. So the technology component sits in that area. So when I look at seeding, I look at talent who's great on the seeding component and the web and the SEO and then the creating. I look for people who understand creative, outbound demand generation, very, very big on implementation, because it's great to have a plan, but if unless you have don't have good implementers, you're pretty much dead in the water. So look for talent that has very solid implementation, and then analytics. There needs to be somebody on your team that can gather this information, get it from your CRM system, structure it in a way that it's palatable for your executives and for your team members, so that you can then start to manage by data and analytics, then basically by guessing or thinking or saying, gee, I think that a lot of people come to our landing page that don't quite know. We know what our best keywords are. We know what our best tactics are. Like, for example, Richardson, my best tactic is Google. Because when people are looking for sales performance improvement, first place they go is they start searching for sales training and individuals who offer those services. They then do their research and they shortlist. So when people come to me, they're already in my second or third stage of my pipeline. So unless I'm advertising to make it for them easy to find me, and for me to find it easy to find them, and I can tie that back to opportunities that go in my pipeline and close revenue, I know where I need to be putting my investments.
I think this is a great model, and to me a great model is always characterized by it just sounds so easy. So seeding, creating, enabling, accelerating, and nurturing and is your basic process, and then you've got the people aligned to those stages. You've got your core technology, which you've got marketing automation, and it's integrated with CRM, correct?
Yep.
And then
one thing to remember, hold on, I'm sorry to interrupt. One thing to remember about technology is most people spend 95% of their budget on technology and 5% on training.
Yeah.
Okay, so wrong, false. If you're looking at marketing automation systems, don't spend 95% of your budget on buying the application and integrating it into your system. Leave a good 30 to 40% to the training of it, to the proper integration of it into the work stream of your demand generation and marketing team and your sales team, because it's like a relay race. Everybody on is a team, right? And those who typically demand generation runs the first one or two parts of the relay, and that baton is that lead and that opportunity, and it has to be exchanged from hand to hand to hand. But once you exchange it to the sales team and they're working it through the pipeline, you still don't stop supporting it. You're still cheering. You're running around the track. You're supporting the individual who's running, right? You need to look at your technology as having to do the same thing, and you have to support it that way.
Oh, I love that analogy. That's a really good one. Because quite often marketers don't understand, once they've handed the lead to sales, kind of what their role is and how they should stay engaged. So I think that's a great way to take a look at it. So let's begin our conversation. And again, Frank, you've been doing this for a number of years now. Clearly you have a great expertise in it. And I remember when we were talking and I said, Frank, what do you want to talk about? And kind of the first words out of your mouth, it's got to be this sales and marketing alignment and key processes that are absolutely fundamental and critical to success for any successful demand generation practice. So let's talk about process from a marketer's perspective when they're taking a look at demand generation And how do you begin as a brand new marketer to take a look at this thing called process?
Yeah, so the first thing I recommend you do is you do it with your sales peer. So if you're a CMO or if you're a vice president of marketing or if you're director of marketing and you're working in a big corporation, you're aligned to an SVP of sales or whatever it is, you do this in conjunction with your sales peer. Because what that does is that ties the two of you together from genesis to conclusion and revenue. It ties the whole thing together, and everybody sees how this thing works.
You know, that's a great piece of advice, and I just have to tell you a funny story about that. We've also suggested the same thing whenever we begin working with a client. And 18 mm-hmm. months ago, we'd come in, we'd be talking to marketing, and we'd say, you know, we need to take a look at process, and we have to get sales involved. And then it'd just be absolute silence. They're like, what? Sales? What? Mm-hmm. Why does sales have to be involved in this?
Yep.
But we're seeing marketers are getting to be a lot more savvy around this. And so you're right. From the very beginning, when you begin to take a look at process, having sales involved is critical.
And,
okay.
And it works. It's vice versa too. It works the other way. And how it works the other way is many times demand generation or marketing teams aren't included in what the sales process is.
Yeah.
Meaning once you hand that opportunity over, that lead over, it's going to be quote unquote prosecuted through some process, right? So you as a marketing individual or revenue generating individual, you need to know that process. You need to be trained on that process. You need to know every stage, every step, every task that has to happen in those. And when your salespeople are being trained on that process, you and your entire team better be in that room getting trained together, because you have to know it, again, from genesis to conclusion. You have to know the entire step, because you're in this with your partner, and your partner is the sales manager and sales team, but they're also your customer, because the investments that you make and everything that you do directly goes to your sales team. So you better treat them like a customer, service them like a customer, and also be a peer of theirs. So the biggest thing I can tell you to do is look at it from that perspective and get included with them early.
So I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
I loved your comment. It works the other way as well. So not only does marketing need to understand how sales works and the role they can play in sales as revenue marketers, but when sales begins to think about and talk about quota, planning, territories, they need to also be thinking about how they can use the demand generation team as an asset, as something that's going to help them achieve that.
Yeah.
When companies begin this demand generation journey, how soon do you think that second part actually happens?
You know, the first part is getting that alignment between you and your peer. And usually that happens with what I like to tell our clients and what I have here at Richardson is I have this thing called a service level agreement. And I sit down with my sales executive and I go, okay, what are the main KPIs that you and I are going to hold each other accountable for this year? Okay, what are those? Okay, revenue, you know, my share of the revenue that's going to come from the investment, hopefully a solid ROI on that, how much the pipeline that does demand generation have to own in order to conclude a net revenue, and we put those numbers down and we sign a service level agreement and we meet monthly and we hold ourselves accountable to what's happening. And if we're behind, what are we going to do to catch up? And if we're ahead, why are we ahead? What are we doing that successful? So it starts there. And then once we have that, we sit down, we look at the process, and we say, all right, how have we typically generated our leads? What's worked, what hasn't worked? How do we want to then improve upon how we look at the quality of those opportunities? So then you want to do and you want to go and you want to put in what's typically called a BAT criteria, budget authority, need, time frame, and trust, or whatever criteria you need to generate to ensure that what you're giving to your salespeople is of high quality so that they can't come back and say, you defaulted on an agreement. You only said you were only going to send me quality leads or quality opportunities. Well, define quality by a score so that everybody is on the same level playing field. And then you have to look at the sales team and say, you know, how do the customers buy now? Because every single year you should be asking yourself that question. How are customers buying? Because
so
you don't want to tell them to go through a process.
Right.
You want to, as much as you possibly can, understand their process, and you're only going to know that by interviewing your sales leaders, looking at what is happening, and embedding yourself in their day and their workflow.
So, Frank, let's come back to that, because I think this is absolutely key. So if you have a new marketer, a new revenue marketer, kind of new in the whole demand generation, and then we say, okay, you have to take a look at process, and you have to understand the process. What is the best way for them to begin? Is it to begin by looking at how their customers are buying? So talk to us about how you would begin to map out and understand these processes.
Yeah, so there's a current process that pretty much every company has out there, and the salespeople typically say, well, the first thing we can do is we prospect, and once we find an opportunity, we're going to qualify it, and then once we qualify it, we're going to have a needs discussion, and once we have a needs discussion, we're going to look and see, are we the right company? Do we have the right product? Are we the right fit? Then usually there's a proposal. Then usually there's a presentation, proposal, finalist, verbal agreement. So what you want to do is you want to work with your sales team to say, okay, do you have a process? If so, what is it? And in that process, then start to look at everything that they do in each step of that process and interview them and find out, from that perspective. And then secondly, interview your clients. Work with sales to uncover a list of clients that will be open to talking to you about their existing buying behaviors and patterns, and what they like and what they dislike when they're buying services or products of which you offer. And gather that and bring that together on an annual basis and look to ensure that you are matching to how your clients buy. And the only way you can do that is you have to do it internally and you have to do it inside and outside. You can't just do it from the inside because otherwise you're guessing.
You're absolutely right. And again, it's a piece of advice that we often share with our clients. And yet I see so few people actually taking the time to do this. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it gets back to time because if you're not focused on it, you're not going to do it.
Right.
So many times in companies who are quarter to quarter, like for example, our quarter's not done yet. We got 2 months and we got one big deal to close to really make it a banner quarter for us. That's what you're focused on. You're focused on those short-term KPIs. Well, you need to ensure that you're focused on those longer-term projects and reviews as well. So you get them on your calendar, put it in Outlook, do whatever you need to do to remind you that you have to do that and that it's something that you build into typically your planning process. So, for example, our Richardson Fiscal 2011 planning starts the 4th of October. So in that, we in the demand generation team have a list of everything that we need to do to plan for the upcoming fiscal year. And we start at the top and we work down to the bottom and we get it all completed and put together and in based on the timeline and the time frame and the demands that the executive team puts on us to deliver. So that's how I recommend you do it. You cannot forget to do it.
So let me ask you this question. So if the advice is go to sales, ask them do they have a process, what is it, look at everything that they do, and then go talk to your clients about how they buy, when you did this analysis, what surprised you about what your clients had to say?
Well, we were sort of watching, we sort of watch how people come into us and how people engage us. And, what was surprising about this say is basically we don't wake up in the morning and say, hey, we need sales performance improvement, because it's almost like during a heart transplant to your sales team. So it's usually something that comes through some sort of executive program or some high-level component of the company where it says we need to transform our salespeople, we need to do some particular things. So they have to be ready to do it. And we have two main types of buyers. We have learning and development people. So the people who are in charge of, the learning and development inside your organization and your LMS system and all the particular things. And the other one is what we call the line or the heads of sales, so your chief sales officer. Well, both of them have, chief sales officer is the end consumer of this, and they basically then, drive that particular need. So we have to wait for that person to know that they have this. Very seldom can I manufacture it. I can say, hey, everybody has these problems out there, but I can't manufacture that need. They have to see it themselves, whether through its performance or whether it's through executive committee deciding that they're going to change and do things differently. So one of the biggest thing that we learned in the last 2 years is they basically said, hey, we'll come to you when you're ready, when we're ready. And so when we looked at, gee, well, when you're ready, that could be like you could call us and ask for a proposal. Well, many times, you know, several times a week, actually, we now get people come to us and say, hey, I'm ready to talk to you. I know all my needs. I've shortlisted you. I want to get a proposal from you in 2 weeks. Let's get on the phone. And we want that to happen. So the question is, based on that buying behavior, how do we be there for those people so when they are ready, they can find us fast, easy, and with no pain?
And so clearly, if you go back to your original model, you can see the role that seeding plays in that. You can see the role that creating plays in that.
Yep.
And you can certainly see the key role that nurturing plays in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I spend over 50% of my demand generation budget on seeding.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I spend a significant amount because that is usually my buyers go there first.
Uh-huh.
Or they pick up a peer of theirs, or they call an analyst, and they say, hey, I'm in XYZ industry. Who's the best in sales training in this industry? I mean, I have to seed that marketplace.
But again, what a great example of the value of understanding how your customers buy. Knowing that unless there's a key initiative that you can't manufacture a lead, and knowing that it's a lot of peer-to-peer discussions that go on, especially at the VP level and higher,
mm-hmm.
you now understand why you need to spend 50% of your budget on seeding. It makes perfect sense.
Yep.
Okay, and I would love to hear from any of our viewers around where you spend the majority of your marketing budget around demand generation. You can either chat that in or you can press 1, and we'd love to hear kind of what your metrics look like on that. So one of the things I like about your approach to process, Frank, is clearly, you know, when I talk to you, it sounds like I'm talking to a VP of sales. And I often tell people that when you're talking to a chief marketing officer who is responsible for demand generation, it sounds like you're talking to a VP of sales because
mm-hmm.
you have a results orientation, you have a revenue orientation. So what advice would you give to the marketer that is beginning to make the transition from being more traditional to more revenue-focused? How can they talk like you? How can they have your level of understanding? How can they get there?
Spend time with your sales team. So get out in the field. I mean, you know, you're never going to do it if you're sitting at your desk. You're not going to get it when you're at a trade show. You have to, if you're a chief marketing officer, go on sales calls. Get involved. Somehow figure out a way that you can add value to a salesperson in their sales cycle and get involved and go on sales calls and listen to you know how they are interacting with their marketplace and their clients. If you're a director or you're a marketing manager and those are specific roles, same thing. Get yourself out of the office, get yourself involved with your salespeople, and also go to every single one of your salespeople's weekly meeting, your sales team's weekly meetings or their quarterly meetings, and embed yourself in their business and ensure that you're, again, in their workflow and you see what's happening to them and you see how they represent themselves in the marketplace, how they talk, what is important to them, and be seen by them. And that is the best way to do it, because if you're not doing that and if you're not engaged in the marketplace with your salespeople, you don't have a pulse on your business, your industry, or your customers. It's just like a salesperson. If you don't spend time with your customer and know their needs and ask them questions and see which way their business is going and actually be a trusted advisor to them, you know, you got to treat them like your salespeople treat their own customers. And when you do that, you're going to end up like this.
Yep, I think that's a great piece of advice, and I'll just share a quick story on that. My background is sales. I've been VP of sales many years. My last company, before we started this company, I actually was a VP of marketing. And when I was a VP of sales and marketing, I could go on sales calls with my sales team. I was interacting with prospects. I was interacting with customers live. And I knew what had to happen from a marketing perspective because I had that firsthand view and those firsthand conversations. When I took this last role as VP of marketing, it was like this huge wall was put up all of a sudden. And I had to really push to get those one-on-one conversations. So I know how hard that is for a lot of marketers, but I do believe that if you are now being held responsible or have any type of revenue responsibility as a result of marketing, and again, you need to have a marketing automation system to power that, if that is absolutely true for you, I think, Frank, your advice is spend time with sales is absolutely, it's just absolutely positively critical.
And so a question I would have out, if I was a marketing person and I was on the phone listening to this and you say to yourself, well, gosh, Frank, what if I have a sales leader who doesn't care or doesn't want me involved? I mean, that happens a lot too because they may not have, quote, unquote, see the value in demand generation.
Mm-hmm.
So ask them a very simple question. How can I help you sell more?
Yep.
I mean, make it personal to that individual because every salesperson is greedy. That's why they're salespeople.
That's right. That's exactly right.
They want to sell more so they can make more. And if you have salespeople who don't want to make more to sell more, you have a problem. So align yourself with how you can help them make more money and then prove to them how you can help them make more money. And then once you prove and once you give to them more than you ask from them, you will then build a very unique bond with that sales leader, and they will then trust you.
I think you
need to cover that bridge because if you have a problem, if you have a problem with your sales leader, like I just explained, do what I just said, and it's going to take some time, energy, and effort, and you may need to put your ego in your back pocket for a little bit.
Yep.
But in the end, it will reward you greatly.
I love that piece of advice. And we often counsel marketers, when they're buying demand generation, they'll say, well, you know, this is great big chasm between marketing and sales, and how do I cross that chasm? And again, once you start using any of these marketing automation systems, you now have the power to go to the VP of sales and say, collectively, how can I help you guys drive more revenue? And more specifically, then have conversations with individual sales reps. How can I help you in your territory?
Yeah.
And again, I think a mark or a characteristic of a team where sales and marketing is absolutely aligned and are working on impacting top-line revenue is that marketing is in those quarterly meetings talking about revenue and the role that demand generation is going to play in that. And if you don't, and if you're not involved in those conversations, then you really are not part of the revenue game. You're not.
Exactly. And where I really learned a lot of this was at SAP they have this thing called QBRs, which is quarterly. Everybody has an acronym for stuff, right? The QBR is called the quarterly business review. And I had eight of them to do. I had eight SVPs who were my clients. I had eight of them to do. And every first week of every quarter, flying all over the United States, and I'm in the room, and each of the salespeople are giving presentations on how they're going to get the number that quarter, and they're going through their tactics. And I'm in the room, and I raise my hand, and I would ask the following question. What do I need to do as your demand generation vendor to help you hit that number? What do you need? So I get in a needs-based dialogue. I get them the answer, and then I drill down on that need until I find truly what it is and how I can help them, what investment I need to make. And that's how, you know, and then once you leave the meeting, your SVP of sales is going to look at you and go, holy schmoly, Batman. I mean, that person really is on board. That person is linked into what I need. I mean, that person's on my train. So you have to get to that level.
Absolutely. And again, you absolutely do. Let's change the conversation just a little bit. We started talking in our dialogue today around key metrics. But as you have told me many times, the role of analytics is absolutely critical. So how do you get them? What should they be? Tell us, you know, what we should be thinking about when we think about analytics as part of a revenue marketing practice.
Yeah, so, you know, it all starts with your process and your ability to gather data because bad data equals bad analytics. So the first thing you want to do is determine how you want to manage the responders to your opportunities with your sales team. For example, at Richardson, we do seating, we do all of our outbound, all the steps that we talked about. We have a process that we follow. So a responder comes in, and we look at them, and we say we have four types. We have type one, which is an inbound contact us. Somebody picked up the phone and called us and say, I'm a Fortune 1500 global company. I have a problem. I want to talk to you. We have a type 2, right, which is a company that's in our pipeline. And they, you know, are in our pipeline, and people are pinging us and coming to us, and we want to get that to the salesperson. Type 3 is we have a responder to an outbound campaign that's a Fortune 1500 company and it's an influencer buyer. We have type 4, right? It's a virtual nurture person, an individual that we've been nurturing. They haven't been quite ready. They keep coming back, getting things, you know, et cetera. So we look at those, and we put them into categories, and we segment them. And then we decide which ones. We decide, hey, if it's an inbound contact, they're ready to buy, they have a need, they want to talk to us and go through a process, that goes right to the salespeople person, right? It gets converted in CRM straight there. You now have to determine how you want to manage each one of your types of leads that you get in. They then get to the salesperson. The salesperson then has to be accountable, whether it's an inside salesperson or a field rep, they have to be accountable for looking at that responder and saying, okay, you know, is there enough information here that qualifies it as a lead, and am I going to work it, or am I going to reject it? And if I reject it, I better have a pretty good reason. So you have to go through your process, you have to map it out, and you have to ensure how you want to manage those. Then you set analytics to each one, such as, and you do it, again, you have to do it backwards. You have to do it from, if I need to sell, you know, $10 in revenue this year, right, as my part of my pipeline, and I know that my sales team completes or closes 20%, how many opportunities do I need in every sales cycle that I have in order to hit that number? So if you look at it, you say, gee, it's two, I have a 20% close ratio, which means that if I got to sell, you know, $10, you know, you do the math and you say, okay, I need, based on my average sales size, I need X has to go into the top of the pipeline. Then you look at the percentage ratio that the salespeople have in accepting or rejecting a lead, and then you take that back to how many responders do I have to get that are then accepted, you know, qualified responders that marketing looks at. And you take it all the way back to responder and you say, okay, now what tactics do I need to deploy that's going to generate the majority of those responders? And what's been successful for me in the past? And what new things am I going to do? So once you know that, and that's your waterfall, you have to understand and create your waterfall. And then you look at your tactics, you build the process, and then you build the handoffs and the connections. The biggest handoff of connection, or there's two. The two big handoff connections is when you give a marketing qualified responder, a marketing qualified lead to a salesperson to accept or reject. That's number one. Number two, that when it gets into the pipeline, the majority of your sales qualified or sales qualified opportunities die in stage one. So you really need to look at that. You have to build that process and map it through, and then in each stage of the pipeline that the salespeople are working those opportunities, you need to know everything you need to do in each one of those stages to properly support your salesperson. So you have to map that entire structure out.
So a couple of things that I think is great about this model. Number one, revenue marketers look at conversion points along the life of a lead to a piece of closed business.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, you know, went through and just kind of characterized, you know, what your process looked like. But again, those conversion ratios are absolutely critical, number one. Number two, I think, you know, this is a waterfall, and I think a waterfall is a fairly new concept to a lot of marketers who have been perhaps focused on advertising and creative. And so we've talked about that a couple of times, which I think is also very important. But once you have, well, two questions. Once you take a look and you say, these are the kinds of analytics. Do you have an analytics dashboard? I mean, what is your reporting process, and how do you, and what analytics do you report up to the CEO or the president of the company?
Yep. So everything happens. So all of our outbound tactics happen through Genius. So email, everything that we can possibly manage happens in Genius because that's where the database is tied to. So every responder, everything that happens, and people who go to landing pages, download things, call us, right, that gets captured and entered into our Salesforce.com system. So we capture all those activities. So Genius manages that entire process. And then I can look in there, and also Genius gives me the analytics based on how my campaigns are working and which ones have the highest, you know, responder to lead ratios, you know, all those particular things are then managed through Genius. It also does all of my nurturing. So which means that it watches all the digital buying behavior and builds dashboards and reports and pings us when individuals have specific buying behavior. We then package that up as a marketing qualified responder that then, you know, gets tied and goes right into Salesforce.com on the lead side and gets managed through accordingly. So you need to have that process. It has to be integrated into your CRM system. You have to build the report. You have to build the custom fields and reports in there because your CRM system does not come with this. Your CRM system is going to come with, hey, here are your generic reports and here are your generic fields. You have to make your process, integrate it, and match it into your CRM system. And then you have to build your reports based on that. So, you know, 90% of my data comes right from my system of record, which is my CRM system, and everybody from demand generation to salespeople are trained on the data that they need to put into the system. We score them on the data. So every month we have a dashboard of and we score them on a point scale of 1 to 10. Salespeople who aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing get scored a 2, 3, or 4, and everybody sees it.
And the one,
and we need to, in sales operations team, sales operations manager, Jamie, who's amazing, she manages that score. We have to average an 8. And if we're not averaging an 8, we then look at the salespeople who aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, and their manager, you know, gets in contact with them because the salespeople are also compensated based on how they manage and use their CRM system because we don't use our CRM as a way to just capture the leads and the contact information, but we also have our sales process and tools and learning embedded in the CRM system, so basically it's of value to the salesperson. So the salesperson wants to use it because they have tools in there, they have sales call planners, and they have a tool that's called an opportunity accelerator that helps them manage the process of selling and closing that opportunity. So we've embedded best practice tools in our CRM system that allows the salespeople to want to use CRM, they have to use the CRM, and they have to gather the mandatory data points that you as a demand generation or a revenue person need to have to generate truthful analytics and analytics that you can trust. And if you don't know what those data points are and your salespeople or your demand generation people aren't entering them into the system, you will never get to that. You will never be able to manage or report against your KPIs.
I completely agree. And I just want to clarify for some of our listeners, when you think about demand generation or a revenue marketing practice, tying marketing automation to your CRM is absolutely critical because CRM is the database of record. It is the de facto place where companies go in general. And so, Frank, it sounds like you've done the best practices integration between Genius and Salesforce.com. You've baked into Salesforce.com all of the key processes and trained people on how to use everything. So I'm also guessing that you use the dashboards and the reporting features in Salesforce.com to provide those demand generation metrics that are pulled in part from Genius. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah, we do because, you know, I can look at the pipeline and see where every demand generated opportunity is in the pipeline, its value, where it came from. So, you know, it has a generation or it has a tactic code tied to it. So I know where it came from. I know if it was email blast marketing our sales call planning tool, or if it was a webinar that we held on consultative selling skills. You know, I know where it was, and at any given time, our dashboards show us what percentage of the pipeline we own, what tactics are in the pipeline that are driving pipeline value, what is closed, and what tactics have closed in revenue, because that tells me where I need to be investing my money.
Excuse me. So you clearly have real-time reporting. So if I'm the CEO of Richardson, I can go into Salesforce or have that report sent to me, and it's real-time, the contribution that marketing is making to revenue. I can get it anytime I want to. Okay.
He gets a weekly in our executive in our executive meeting weekly. The report is provided, and you know, we call out particular things that are happening, and then if he wants to dig deeper into data and analysis, is there, and usually he does. So, you know, we come ready for answering of questions every week.
Yeah, we have a couple of questions. We only have about 5 minutes left, but we do have a couple of questions. And the first one, Frank, I started laughing when I saw this one. This person says, wow, I'm tired just listening to you. How long does it take to put something like this together?
Everybody sitting down. We've been at it for 2 years, and it's taken 2 years. It is not something that you put in overnight. You can buy the technology overnight. You can put things in place and processes. It will take you, once you get your process and everything we've talked about, it's going to take you at least 3 to 4 sales cycles to get enough data and information to be able for you to see your close ratios and things that are happening in your lead nurturing process, et cetera. So for us, our sales stages are 4 to 5 months. I mean, our sales cycles are 4 to 5 months. So when I look at it, that's almost two years worth of data before I really start to see behavior change and impact and all of that. So you can start to have a really, really good impact in the first 6 to 8 months, but before you really become proficient at it, it will take you upwards of 2 years.
I think that is, I have never heard anyone put it this way. You need to work through 3 to 4 sales cycles, and that mm-hmm. makes so much sense. And we do see people, clearly companies that have reached the level of sophistication that Frank has at Richardson, again, it's not something they've been doing for a month or two. We do find it's 2 years, it's 2.5 years, because, again, you're knitting together people, process, and technology mm-hmm. across the entire buying process and the whole life cycle of a client. And, again, that's a lot of different pieces to pull together.
And let me say one thing. Don't be afraid to fail.
And
let me tell you why. The process I just walked everybody through, that wasn't our first process. I failed on our first one. So do not be afraid to try. Remember, somebody always says, right, you're never going to score unless you shoot at the hoop or unless you shoot at the net or whatever you want to do. You're never going to score unless you try. So you may not get it right out of the gate. You have to tweak. You have to change. You have to understand what's happening based on your metrics and things that are happening. So the first process we started with worked to a specific point, and as the market was changing and our buyers were changing, we had to change the process. And as we learned more about our salespeople and about the type of salespeople we have and their skills and their abilities, we had to change other things too. So you are going to learn so much as you're going through the process
yep.
that you're going to have to tweak and change. So do not be afraid to fail.
So I tell people, fail fast and fail
yep.
forward. So anyway.
That's correct.
Well, Frank, you have been absolutely wonderful. You have given us a ton of information, a ton of data points to talk about. I learned so much just from hearing you speak. Want to make sure that everyone knows that next week we're going to be talking to Sally Lowry from Bronto Software. She's built a phenomenal inside telequalifying team. She uses Marketo, and she has been at this for about 2 years. And she also will be sharing with us just a great story about the kind of impact that her revenue marketing practice has made on Bronto Software. So please join us next Thursday at 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Thank you so much, Frank, for being on our show today.
Hey, no problem. Thank you, everybody.